Development Alternatives with Women for a New Era, or DAWN, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic south working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is done by DAWN as a way of sharing its feminist critical analysis of the global environment through the voices of women from the south. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. DAWN Podcasts, the voices of women creating a just world.
The women's movement does have youth and new shoots coming into it in a variety of ways. And I think that that is where our future is, and that's where our optimism comes from. Let me also start out by saying how delighted, Charlotte, that I'm here for your to honor you, and also for the 20th anniversary, Radhika, of CWGL and this great institution that Charlotte and others have worked so hard to create, and that has been a real beacon for us in terms of how human rights has become so central to everything that we do and how we do it. It's a little hard to imagine, isn't it, that the language that says women's rights are human rights is actually hasn't always been there forever. And I think that we all know what part of the movement and who we owe that to. In talking about human rights in the context of economics, I just want to step back a little bit to reflect on something which I think is as important in the economics area as it is when we are talking about sexuality or reproduction. And for those who heard me yesterday, please bear with me. I'm not going to go on and on about these issues, but I just want to spell out something that I did say yesterday at the DAWN panel. And that is something that we know, which is that if we want human rights to become the basis of our work in the economics area, learning from lessons we've learned in other areas, there are usually two, and I would argue actually three things that are, or three stages that are really important. One that we all know, which is the recognition stage, that is the creation of norms, the setting of standards, the transformation of discourse, the change in how we talk about an issue and how we talk about a problem. And we know that this is the crucial first step, without which it's very difficult to go anywhere. Because if we don't create that step and see how that step of recognition is, that there is recognition, then we always get told that's not in the UDHR. You know, what are you talking about? You know, you can't just go on creating human rights any way you please. So the business of recognition, as we know, is almost the critical first sine qua non of doing anything with human rights. But this is not enough, as we all know well, because apart from anything else, the setting of norms and standards gives us goals, gives us outcomes against which we can measure what we do or, you know, check ourselves as we move along. But it doesn't necessarily give us methods for how we might get to those goals, reach those outcomes, and so on. And that how, the how question is, of course, the question that sometimes gets answered by saying, well, that's about realizing rights. How do we realize rights? In the language of governments, governments would say implementing rights. But, of course, in the language of the women's movement, it's not about implementation, it's about realization. This question of realizing rights is much less glamorous than the first one of recognition, because it involves such nitty-gritty things as not just of enforcement, but also of the creation of institutions, where's the money to come from, what's the nuts and bolts of how you're going to do it, etc. Non-glamorous, but absolutely essential if we are to be able to go forward. And the third one, which in some senses I think we actually may be in, which in some ways may be prior to the business of recognition, is actually, do we for the economics area have our definitions about human rights adequately in place? And I'm not absolutely sure that we do at this point. I think that the kind of work that Diane and Radhika and so on are doing is helping us to get there, but I actually think that we may need to do more in order to get to the point where we got in Vienna in 1993 with these economic rights issues. Let me move from here then to say something about drawing from the example of India in terms of the way in which moving forward to the realization of rights can happen. Everybody knows India as the place of outsourcing, 7% economic growth in the middle of the crisis, booming cities, all sorts of things. Those of you who have been there know that this is not the India of 15, 20 years ago. This is really a different India. That's the shining India nonsense that the government sometimes loves to talk about. There's another side to India, which is about great and growing inequality, as there is for China. Great continuation of absolute poverty. And the Indian government finally, after arguing for years and years back and forth about the levels of poverty and trying to argue that the economic reforms had absolutely reduced poverty, say that finally has agreed that in fact the best estimates that we can now give for the extent of rural poverty in India are around 40%. Now, that is not a shining India that we're talking about. That's not just inequality. That is absolute poverty at very rock-bottom levels of measurement. Now, in the face of that kind of polarizing change in the country, what the social movements have been involved in, with women very much in the leadership of those movements, are movements for the right to work, the right to food, and the right to information as buttressing the arguments for accountability. And those rights-based movements have in fact begun to take what used to be a benevolent charity approach to social security and social welfare and transformed them into rights as guaranteed and deriving from the Constitution. And I think that in that context, we are actually, despite all of the problems that we have, we are in a new era in India in terms of rights coming to the fore of economic issues in a very central way. Finally, and my time is up, how do we make this kind of shift happen at the global level? Because that's one country, and it can be, because it's so large, it can be a very, it can be a country that gives examples. But what do we do at the global level? And I would say, and we can pick this up in the discussion, there are some three or four things that I think are crucial. The first is on overseas development assistance. Finally, we are seeing an acceptance of the need for alternative financing mechanisms. We need to move towards taxation rather than aid as benevolence. ODA is to, at the global level, ODA is to charity as tax, as a tax on financial transactions or other things is to income taxes or domestic or other taxes at the domestic level. Those create a basis for rights. We don't need to continue with a completely and increasingly dysfunctional development assistance system. And we need to figure out how we can argue for moving from one to the other. And I think that there are openings in the crisis for doing that. The second one is absolutely, and this is something that Dawn and the Women's Working Group on Financing for Development and others have been working on, which is to really work with alliances to change the systems for global governance of the financial and the economic system along the lines that Diane was speaking about. Related to this, the ILO sits in Geneva, and it's like they talk about decent work and the right to decent work somewhere from far across where nobody hears them, but they need to be absolutely central. What happens to employment, what happens to work, and how the right to work can get implemented at the international level is, I think, a huge challenge for us. Finally, let me just say that there is hope with national governments, however pathetic they may sometimes be with us, and one example of that is, in fact, we all know, particularly coming from the South, countries of the South, that our governments will sign on to anything at the international level. But when they come home, it's an entirely different story altogether. We don't even know what they sign on to, and that is not just for the good stuff, it's also for the bad stuff. We don't know the stuff that they're signing on to in bilateral trade agreements that they go and sign somewhere else. We don't know what they sign on these things. As much as we don't know what they sign, or find it difficult to hold them accountable on the positive things. The Thai government recently, the Thai parliament passed an act which said that the Thai government cannot sign on to anything which is not then going to go through parliament. So what, if it's good enough for the US in terms of ratification in Congress, it's good enough for the Thai government in terms and the Thai people. And I think those are the kinds of directions and possibilities that we have in the middle of this crisis. Thank you.
For more information on the work of Dawn, do not hesitate to contact us. Our email address is info@dawnnet.org.